Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
I'm here today with Stephen Yu, Chief Investment Officer of Blue Whale Capital. Stephen, very nice to be back with you again. So tell me, why are we here?
The business has been running for the last 2 years. We have delivered some very decent performance. And recently, I have been speaking to quite a few investors in the conferences and meetings. And we were quite overwhelmed in terms of the interest that we receive. And I thought that it would be good to take this opportunity doing a video with you, Tamsin, to answer as many questions as possible. And the way that we want to do this is we want to take our investor through a journey. So in the near future, if any investor have any question, feel free to drop us a line. And then we would try to answer as many as we can, and so that our investor understand what they have put their money into, and also they can then grow with us at Blue Whale.
So just before we move on to the questions from investors, I think that I ought to congratulate you because it's a very special day. Blue Whale Capital has just become number one since inception out of 300 funds in the IA global sector. That's amazing. So talk us through the fund's performance this year and how that sits alongside the macro picture.
Yes. So I think it might be interesting just to maybe just briefly to recap what happened in 2018, and then I will touch on this year. So in 2018, the market was in a negative territory. So the market was down 3%, our peer group was down 6%, and the fund was up about 8 to 9%. So in a negative market conditions, the fund managed to deliver positive returns and also outperforming the market by over 10%. This year, in 2019, we have a very different market conditions. Obviously, I think if you look at a lot of the market indices or different funds, the majority of the funds have delivered positive returns. And the way that we measure the market, if you use MSCI World Net GPP as a proxy to the world market, then the market's up about 20%. And the fund that we run, we are up over 25%. So we have also beaten the market by over 5%. It's a bit less than last year, but we have a very different market condition. This year is about making money and compounding your return from last year. And I think if you put the two together, then yeah, we have delivered very strong and consistent performance since we started the fund. And I think that is something that we feel quite happy with.
So moving on to investor questions, Tony from Durham asks, with Brexit, we might anticipate volatile exchange rates. How will this affect Blue Whale Capital? And do you have any thoughts on currency hedging?
So there are a couple of points that I would make on this. The first one is very important for our investors to remember that we run a global mandate. At the moment, we have a majority of our investment sits outside the UK. So if there's any swing in GBP versus, let's say, US dollar or euro, then the fund would reflect that in terms of performance on an absolute basis, at least over the short-term period.
So that means if sterling goes up, then that negatively impacts you. And if sterling goes down, it positively impacts you.
On an absolute basis, okay. Correct. One interesting statistic that I would point to is since we started the fund until today, so about 2 years and three, 4 months, that we have not benefited or suffered from sterling's movement. So as we sit here today, I think that number is less than 1%, our 40% that we deliver for our investor. So that is the currency movement embedded into the overall performance number. So that's, I think, one interesting statistic to refer to. The second thing I think is quite important for our investor to remember is the way that we measure out the success of the Blue Whale Growth Fund is to deliver our performance versus the market or our peer group. And if we use MSCI World Net GBP as a proxy to the world stock market, then we have similar geographic exposure to the market, which also majority of the investment sits outside the UK. So if, let's say, sterling does go up and down, we would still be able to beat our peer group or the benchmark. But last but not least, this is something, of course, the currency hedging issue is quite important one. So when we first started the fund, we have, as part of the strategy, that we do have the ability to hedge the currency if we feel there's something structural about the movement in sterling or US dollars, for example. But the way that we do it on a daily basis, or the way that we feel that we are adding more value, is that when we go through the fundamental of the company, when we build financial model and try to make forecasts, we would take the currency movement into account. So to give you one example, if we feel quite strongly about there's a sustainable recovery in the UK economy, then we would probably want to revisit some UK companies, and that would be more beneficial to the fund. So if that happens, rather than just hedging for GBP for the existing portion of the fund that we have in the US or outside of the UK, we would want to invest more into UK assets. And I think that then the fund would benefit even more in terms of performance that we can deliver.
So providing the natural hedge.
Exactly.
So moving on to the next question, which comes from Adam in London. He asks, in terms of specific holdings, some such as Alphabet or Intuit have jumped in and out of the top 10 during 2019. Is this due to volatility of the share price and it doesn't reflect a change in volume of holding by Blue Whale Capital? Or is it a change of conviction in these companies and hence a change in the size of Blue Whale Capital's position?
Thank you for the question. It's a bit of both. So from time to time, that if we continue to maintain the position in the fund without doing anything, then of course the stock holding would be subjected to the market movement. And hence, sometimes that the gap between the top 10 or the top 11 stocks in the fund, that could be plus minus, let's say 0.2 or 0.5%. So if there's some movement within the month without us doing anything, you would expect that the top 11 position might have replaced the top 10 position, for example. So I think that's something just to remember, that it could be just a byproduct of the market movement. But more importantly, over the medium term, so if you do see a sustainable change in weighting, meaning that, let's say, if the top 11 position ended up in the top 10 and continue to be a top 10 over the medium term, then there's probably a change of conviction, which means that the stock that we replace it with in the top 10, that we have even higher conviction. And that's a byproduct of two things. One is that we do have a very strict discipline on valuation. So if the valuation become less attractive or some other stock become more attractive, then we would want them to be in the top 10 or not in the top 10. And secondly, which doesn't happen very often, is about thesis violation. So if at one point in time that we feel very strongly about this company, but something has changed in terms of news flow, something very fundamental to the company, we want to act on it. So we would then probably be reducing the position, or we might be selling the complete position outright. And I would be able to expand on this, that we have a few examples. And this year, we have made two changes, and both of them were top 10 holdings in the fund. This year. So one was Adidas, which has been a top 10 holding in the fund since we started. We still like the company. Nothing has changed in terms of the quality of the business. But if you look at the performance of Adidas share price year to date in 2019, the shares has gone up 50%. So we have done very well out of Adidas. But if you look at the drivers behind the share price movement, over 40% was due to re-rating on Adidas shares, and only 10% of that was down to earnings revisions. So what it tells you is Adidas has become 40% more expensive now compared to this time last year. And of course, because we do have a strict discipline on valuation, and we don't feel Adidas is attractively valued anymore. Hence, we sold the company during the summer this year. So that is a change of valuation. That's one thing. And then the other stock that I could touch on is Smith & Nephew. So Smith & Nephew has been a top 10 holding since summer and in 2018. It has done extremely well for us. The reason that we invested into Smith & Nephew and the reason that we like it is because of the management turnaround story in the business. So we really like the team that the chief executive, Namo Navanda, has brought in last year. And then they have made a lot of changes and the company continue to do well. But unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago, that the chief executive decided to resign and leave the company. And that was a totally like a black swan event, like we couldn't have foreseen it. And If we then revisit our investment thesis on Smith & Nephew, that is totally a thesis violation. So even though that it was in the top 10, it's done very well for us, that we no longer feel that we can justify why we are still holding Smith & Nephew. Mm-hmm. So we completely sold Smith & Nephew during the summer as well. So these two stocks, I think it gives maybe our audience a bit of a flavor that there's something fundamental related to the company. One would be valuation, the other one would be thesis violation. And if we still feel quite strongly about the company, both on valuation and the quality of the business, then we would want to continue to hold onto those stocks without doing anything. So I think that is definitely that. But last but not least, I would want to remind our audience that the top 10 holdings always reflect the highest conviction part of the portfolio. So if you look at the top 10, you would be sitting in the same shoes as us at Bluewell, that they are the strongest conviction part of the portfolio. Anything outside of the top 10, that could be for a different reason. Either it's share price movement, or we just feel less strongly about them at any point in time. And so I think that's important for investors to make a note of that.
So moving on to Jonathan, who doesn't give a location, and Bernard from Hong Kong, they ask, what's your view on timing the markets and handling inevitable volatility, both in terms of normal short-term corrections and larger significant corrections, and your view on volatility at a company-specific level?
So there are a couple of points to make on that. Firstly, we are bottom-up investors. So we focus on companies. We don't try to time the market on the top-down level. So that's very important to remember. And the way that we see risk in the fund or in our investment is about permanent loss of capital, which is not just about the volatility of the share price. So the question that we will ask ourselves anytime that we will see, let's say, a share price movement of more than 5% in our holdings, we will be asking, is there any fundamental news flows coming into our companies? Are we going to change our assumptions? Is that going to impact the projection that we have made on this company? If the answer is yes, then we will act on it. So we would then take the market movement very seriously because it's backed by fundamentals. But if the answer is no, then we would see this as an opportunity to invest more at a more attractive price, because that is just the stock market can sometimes behave irrationally. And of course, a lot of companies would probably be quite correlated in general without any reflection on the underlying fundamentals. So I think that's the way that we do it. But what we do not do is we do not try to time the market. I think that is a thing that we don't feel anyone could actually do it successfully over a long period of time. But what we feel that we can add value at Bluewell is to focus on company fundamentals. We try to gauge the price that we want to pay for, which are based on the models that we built, based on the projection that we made over the medium term. And then we continue to follow the investment thesis. So we want to assure that the company that we invest into continue to be high quality, they continue to deliver to our expectations. And the volatility, if you're just talking about general market sell-off or rise in the market, then we will see that as an opportunity to act on it.
And if it's a stock-specific volatility, how do you know the jumping in point? If you're going to buy it, you're averaging down, so to speak, what point do you jump on if the price is going down because of volatility?
I think we are very opportunistic about that. And I think maybe one example that I would give you is, I think throughout the course of the last two years that we've been running the fund, we do have experienced periods that the market have a massive sell-off. We did have experienced period that our holdings also got sold off at the same time. And the way that we would act on this is that we would be digging around to make sure there's no fundamental reason behind the sell-off in our stock. So of course the market sells off across different reasons. So you have like Brexit, China slowing down, the Trump tariff across the world, like not just China, maybe Europe now. So the market would act on that. And also there's interest rates, that is a lot of politics that's going on in the world now. But then what we would be asking is whether our company's performance are going to be impacted, for example, let's say Brexit or the tariff. And if the answer is no, which is the case for our holdings. They are all global companies. They are not dependent on Trump tariff or the success play out of the Brexit story. So they would be able to continue to deliver despite what you see on the headline news. Mm. And so we would then see that as an opportunity. Of course, we can never pick a moment to say, okay, now that is the bottom of the sell-off that we would then be going all in. You would never know that until after the facts. So we would try to act accordingly, depending on the situation. But as we sit here today, that we are holding about 10% cash, the reason that we have 10% cash in the fund is not because we try to time the market, it's because we follow a very strict discipline on valuation. And hence, if, let's say, we do get an opportunity, because there's some volatility in the share price of our holdings, we will be able to act on it quite promptly and quickly.
So picking up on the second part of their question, do you think that US tech stocks or any US stocks are in bubble territory, which increases Blue Whale Capital's risk or makes another geography more attractive?
So there are two parts to the question. So firstly, I would touch on the technology parts. I've been saying this for some period of time now, and I've definitely recognized that there's a bubble in the privately VC-backed market. So any company that floated in the market over the last 12 months, including the likes of Uber, Lyft or Peloton, you would have seen what happened to their share price. They are on average down about 35 to 40%. And also we have the failed IPO from WeWork. And the commonality about all these companies is their business model is a bit broken to start with. And hence, what they're doing is burning a lot of cash, which means that their cash flow is negative and their business model is not sustainable. That is something that we would want to avoid at all costs. And we deem all these companies as very low quality businesses. We don't even cover them because they don't even come onto our radar. Mm. So that is one thing to remember, that is a bit of a bubble, but that is not in the public domain. In the public domain, which is where we focus on, the listed equities, that we are very selective in terms of the company that we pay. We don't like companies that produce hardware that are dependent on some capital expenditure by companies. So let's say if you have a negative sentiment in the market now, then people might be holding back spending more money on equipments related in technology. So we want to avoid those areas as well. The companies that we invest into, so for example, we have a company called Adobe that has been a top 10 holding since we started. We really like it. If you look at the valuation of Adobe, look at the balance sheet metrics and all everything else, the growth opportunities, it's trade in 5 years from today, based on our assumption, is actually trading at a discount to the markets. So we feel quite positive about the valuation of Adobe. And of course, we have others in the fund as well. So we are extremely selective in the company that we invest into. And we do not feel that if that's, let's say, if maybe, I don't know, maybe if Uber disappeared tomorrow, of course, the market might panic a little bit. And maybe some of our stocks would also get sold off because people don't understand them as well as us. But to echo the other question that I just talked about on volatility, we would see that as a great opportunity because Uber disappearing would not have any impact on the growth trajectory for Adobe with any other names that you see in our fund. And that would be a massive opportunity for us to invest more. So we don't feel that we will be negatively impacted if there's something happen outside of the world that we focus on. So that's one part of the question. The second part to your question is about the US markets. So I think a lot of commentators have talked about the US markets now trading at a historical high in terms of valuation compared to, say, the UK equity market, which is a historical low. Mm. And hence, I think that some asset allocator, they would say, okay, maybe we should now sell US and invest into UK market because there's a big disparity in terms of headline valuation. But we don't, but for Blue Whale, the reason that we have 65 to 70% in the US is not about the US economy. The company that we invest into have very little to do with US economy. They are all global companies. So to go back to my previous example on Adobe, has Adobe got anything to do with US economy? Yes, partly. US economy is a big part of the world GDP. Mm. So of course, Adobe is exposed to that. Mm. But what Adobe is really exposed to is the digital contents creation. And there's been an explosion of contents in the world, people watching more YouTube video, that's the digital advertising, etc. And it doesn't just happen in the US, it happened in the UK, in Europe, in Asia. And Adobe is exposed to the world, and US is part of that. So the way that we look at Adobe, or the way that we look at the US market, is in context of the overall opportunity set. So if you say to me, yeah, is the US market overvalued? I would say probably yes, on an aggregated basis. Then the next question you ask me, do you feel Adobe is overvalued? We don't think so. We think that Adobe is attractively priced for the quality of the business and also the opportunity. So that is how we assess any company that we have in the fund. And I just recap that we are bottom-up investors. We are not trying to do asset allocation. And I think we will leave that to some other expert who can do that better.
So Adam from London says, can you talk us through your investments in the managed funds category?
Yes, that's something that I probably want to maybe elaborate a little bit, that I should have done that beforehand. So I think it's, thank you for the question, Adam. And the managed fund is really just the ETF that we have, that we utilize from time to time as part of our portfolio management too. And the ETF that we use would be the MSCI World Index, which is the proxy for the world stock markets. And the reason that we would utilize that is because that sometimes we do not want to hold too much cash. So we still want to keep the level of exposure to the market while we are working on new ideas. So let's say we decided to sell a stock today, and then we are still in progress of working on a new idea to replace it with. What we don't want to do is to rush into new ideas, or we just reinvest in the money into some other things that we don't feel that we have strong conviction on. Mm. But the way to keep up with our market exposure is then we would utilize the ETF, which are the managed funds in that category, in the definition, to manage that. But in time, that I think you should not expect that as a permanent feature of the fund. So in time, that when we work on new ideas, we want to replace it with stocks.
So moving on to the next question from Aidan in Edinburgh and Shiraj from somewhere in the UK. What's the rationale for the cash holding, and doesn't this adversely affect the fund's performance?
So I would try to answer this question in number of folds. Firstly, I think you're right that it has been a small drag to the overall performance of the fund this year because the market has been quite strong this year. So we would be up if we have been fully invested. This year that we will be up probably maybe a couple percent more than the 25% that we delivered to the mid-December this year. But more importantly, I think what I want to remind our investors about is the investment philosophy at Blue Whale, that not only that we want to invest into high quality businesses, but we want to invest and continue to hold onto them at an attractive price. So what do we mean by attractive price? We look at valuation. We want to see there's enough upside potential. And of course, this year that I've already talked about earlier on Adidas, that has been re-rated significantly. So for us to continue to hold onto Adidas at such a high multiple, in relation to the quality of the business, we do not feel that that's justified. So we actually have sold Adidas completely. And of course, that would contribute to a big part of the cash that you see on our fund today. And then secondly, I think I would probably want to touch on a little bit on, there's two parts to the equation to in order to generate significant outperformance on a consistent basis over the medium term. One certainly is to maximize your outperformance in a rising market. And I think this year that we have beaten the market by over 5%, we are quite happy about. But then secondly, you do want to protect the downside. So if you overpay for something in a down market, you will suffer. And I would want to bring our investor back to 2018. In 2018 last year, that the market was down in a negative territory and the fund was up. And that was all because that we have very strict discipline on valuation. If we didn't have that and we overpay for a lot of shares, then in a market downturn, just like in 2018, we would also suffer. So we want to protect the downside. So the one question that I always get asked about is, so if you haven't managed to get enough new ideas into the fund at an attractive valuation, why don't you just reinvest all the cash into the likes of Adobe, into any top 10 holdings that you see on our fact sheet? But the way that we run the position sizing is we would set an absolute limit based on the quality of the business and also at the same time on valuation. So we do not feel that it is right just to increase the risk to some stock-specific name in order to capture the overall market movement, because then we will be taking more risk in the fund rather than protecting the downside. So I think that is something that's a trade-off at the end. So we miss out maybe 2% this year. But over the medium term, we feel that this is the right approach, that we would deliver consistent outperformance, whether it's in a rising or in a negative market.
Okay, so moving on to the question from Tony. What's your key man risk policy when someone leaves or becomes ill?
So there are five of us in the investment team, and you can see some of our profile on our website. And I think the most important thing for our investor to remember is we at Bluewell, we do employ a team-based approach. So everything that happened on the fund level or not in the fund, so let's say new ideas which might be coming into the fund, we would debate any ideas to the nth degree. And if I give you one example, it's about PayPal, which has been a top 10 holding in the fund since we started. And between the five of us, we would probably have debated over 100 hours just on PayPal alone as one company, in addition to the few hundred hours that we would spend on researching the companies, etc. So what do I mean by that? It means that every one of us has a good grip on the investment that we made in the fund. And so if someone is on holiday or someone is ill, then someone will be able to pick it up. And so we don't tend to have like a single individual who cover a couple of stocks that no one knows about. So we work as a team and we feel that that's the right approach.
So Aidan again from Edinburgh has asked, academic studies have shown that funds that are concentrated and traded infrequently tend to outperform the competition. Blue Whale gets one of these right, but not the other. Is this a mistake in the investment approach?
This is a great question. Thank you, Aidan. You are completely right. We agree with both the concentrated part and also infrequent trading. And if I just start off with one example, it's Adobe. So Adobe is a company that we have. It has been a top 10 holding for us since we started the fund until today. The average position size over the last 2.5 years was about 5%. So we did nothing. So we continue to, of course, we have a lot of inflows into the fund and we continue to top up to maintain the 5% weighting. If you look at the share price movement of Adobe, it has returned over 100% over the last 2 years. But if you break it down into how much the shares is now become more expensive and how much of that share price return was due to earnings revisions, which are linked to fundamentals, that over 85% of the movement was due to earnings revisions. So only about 15% was related to the shares become a bit more expensive over the last 2.5 years. And of course, if you look at the overall market, that the market has become probably a bit much more than 15% in terms of being more expensive. So I think that is one great example that we still love Adobe in terms of the quality of the business. We really like the valuation because it has not become significantly more expensive. And based on our assumptions that it's trading very attractive valuation in five years from today at a discount to the market. So if we can have all our stocks like Adobe in the fund, then we would not be doing any trading. So I think that is one thing that we want our audience to remember, that we don't want to trade for the sake of trading. But there are three scenarios that we might need to do something which will be related to trading. I think firstly is about thesis violation. I already touched on earlier that we had a top 10 holding in Smith & Nephew and the chief executive who was instrumental in doing a management turnaround story decided to leave. And that was a black swan event. Mm. And that constitute a thesis violation based on why we have started a position in Smith & Nephew before. So we decided to act on it and then we sold the stock. So that would be one reason why we will be acting on something. Secondly, I already talked about Adidas, that the shares have become more expensive. So the valuation is no longer attractive. And we feel that the valuation that Adidas is trading today no longer justify for the quality of the business. So we will act on valuation front. And last but not least, if we do have a better ideas that's coming into the fund, as you rightly reminded me, that we run a concentrated portfolio, about 30 stocks. So if we have a better name coming into the fund, then we would need to sell something in order to give us space. And we are not running a diversified, overly diversified portfolio to say, okay, we are going to keep adding new stocks. So if something is coming in, then something needs to come out. Mm-hmm. So that would constitute to some trading. But we do not want to trade if we don't have to. Mm-hmm. And we would love, we can have all our holdings like Adobe continue to do well for us, continue to deliver, and we would have a better life or easier time to manage the fund. So I think that is something that we work quite hard on.
So that's all the investor questions. So leave us with a picture of how you feel about 2020. It's a very good beginning to the year, but we've got an election. How do you see it both for the fund and for the macro picture?
So on the fund level, that we are very optimistic about the companies that we invest into. We do feel that they will be able to continue to deliver to our expectations despite a lot of macro uncertainties that's out in the market. And looking forward to 2020, I think based in relation to the time that we started the fund 2 years ago, I think the world has become a lot more uncertain. Of course, in 2020, we would probably have a firm answer on how Brexit is going to play out. We would have a presidential election in the US. China would probably continue to slow down. You will probably continue to see protests in Hong Kong. You will probably see a lot of politics that's happening around the world. So there's a lot of headline uncertainty, which we'll probably expect to see more of that compared to the last 2 years. But what we are quite sure about is the companies that we invest into, they are not going to be impacted much by any of the headline uncertainty that you read on newspaper. And that's something that we feel quite strongly about. So I think to maybe just to summarize that, we invest into high quality businesses. So assuming that all our holdings remain high quality, which means no thesis violation, which means they continue to deliver what they're going to deliver, then the second part of the equation is for us to evaluate or assess the valuation is attractive. And as we sit here today, I think we feel quite comfortable about the valuation of our holdings in the fund, which is about 30 names. And if they continue to be attractively priced, then we feel that we could deliver our performance in 2020. So that is something that we would continue to focus on, and we would evaluate any opportunity that comes up. If there's anything that might impact our company, we will act on it. And I think that is how we have done or operated over the last 2 years, and we'll continue to do so.
Stephen, thank you very much indeed, and congratulations on what you've achieved so far.
Thank you, Tamsin. And thank you to all the investors who provided us with questions today. We really welcome their support at the early stage of Bluewell. We'll continue to work hard to deliver the outperformance in 2020. If there are any more questions, feel free to drop us a line and we will try to address them at our next Q&A session. Thank you.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.